Coming up on this episode of The Social Hour, Amber and I are talking to Andy Bayo, the founder of Upcoming.org. He recently had a very popular Kickstarter and is going to do some interesting stuff with the property. We'll tell you all about that, plus a lot more, next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for The Social Hour is brought to you by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is The Social Hour with Sarah Lane and Amber MacArthur, episode 161, recorded Thursday, May 8th, 2014. This episode of The Social Hour is brought to you by Offset.com, a new brand from Shutterstock. Offset provides a collection of high-end, royalty-free photography and illustration from award-winning talent. To receive a buy one, get one free image on new accounts, go to offset.com/welcome/social hour. And by 99 Designs, the world's largest graphic design marketplace. 99 Designs connects businesses seeking quality, affordable designs with a community of more than 295,000 graphic designers. Visit 99designs.com/social hour and receive a free power pack upgrade valued at $99. And by Audible.com. To download a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/social hour. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Social Hour. It is episode 161, and from Twit World Headquarters in Petaluma, California, I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Amber MacArthur, and I am back home in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. Hello, Sarah. How are you doing?
I'm really good. How are you, Amber?
I am doing well. I've been doing quite a bit of traveling the past week, so I'm a little tired, but I have been caffeinating. I avoided caffeine for quite some time, many years, but now I'm back on it, Sarah.
You're back on the wagon, off the wagon, I guess. So is this coffee? Is it tea? Is it both? What is your caffeine of choice?
Whatever I can get my hands on, Sarah.
Right.
Tea,
welcome back.
Coffee, lattes, yeah. Iced tea.
Everything. Yeah, I'm not really a soda person. I know there's caffeine in soda, but I mean, just the idea of having a cup of coffee in the morning, I mean, gets me out of bed. It's so exciting to me that I'm like happy to get up.
I know.
Because
you know,
I want
funny,
that coffee.
I'm so with you. And 2 weeks ago, I was away on a trip and Chris bought me an espresso machine, but like a real espresso machine, not just the little pods, but you actually make it. And now I'm obsessed with making my own lattes, different flavors and trying it out. So unfortunately, like I'm buzzing all day. So I don't know when I'll crash, but so far, so good.
Well, you look lovely. The buzz works for you. All right, well, let's get into some of our news of the day. We're going to start out with some news. We do have an interview with Andy Bayo, who is the founder of Upcoming.org. We're going to talk to him a little bit later in the show. He's got actually a really, really great story about bringing it back. It's kind of a Web 2.0 property that sort of went away. And, well, we'll talk to him about it. But let's start off with the story from the New York Times about Snapchat reaching a settlement with the Federal Trade Commission. This is kind of interesting because, of course, Snapchat, we've talked about this on the show at length, is all about the idea of ephemeral messaging, meaning messages that only last for a short period of time. It's very hot with the kids. I love Snapchat. It's actually gotten some new features over the last week. You could now text chat with friends and video chat with friends, and it's all very in real time. We talked about this about a week ago, Amber. But the FTC said, well, you know, there are problems with the idea that you're misleading your users because messages don't really disappear forever. There are easy ways to take screenshots of them, for example, or in other ways save them. There was a security breach with Snapchat a while ago. There was an issue with accessing people's address books without explicit permission. Mm-hmm. So the whole thing is, you know, the settlement itself, the details of that is a little bit under wraps. But well, I don't know. What do you think? How much of the Snapchat user base cares about any of this?
I'm guessing that very few of them really care about any of this, but I do think that there's a larger problem here, and you definitely touched on it, the idea that people think that these messages do entirely go away and maybe don't totally understand that, because even when I explain Snapchat to people, they still look a little puzzled if they're not regular users. So I could see a broader problem where people don't quite grasp the idea that those messages could potentially be seen, and I think in some cases, I kind of understand what the FTC is saying here.
Yeah, I think so, too. The company declined a request to give a statement to the New York Times. But under the terms of the settlement, so, you know, there is things that Snapchat has to do. Snapchat will be prohibited from misrepresenting how it maintains the privacy and confidentiality of user information. They also have to now start a wide-ranging privacy program that will be independently monitored for 20 years. Fines, of course, could ensue if the company does not comply with the agreement. This is pretty standard, actually, even though it sounds kind of dramatic. Facebook had the same issue with the FTC a couple of years ago. Same sort of privacy stuff. What it really comes down to, I guess, Amber, is you've got these end user agreements. Everyone's supposed to say, yeah, okay, I agree. But no one's necessarily reading them. And the FTC knows that. And it's kind of like, well, sure, we as users are buying into all of this stuff. But when a company is maybe not deliberately trying to trick anybody, but kind of not going out of its way to be transparent enough, then, you know, the FTC has to step in. So I'm not sure if that's really going to change the experience for all of us, but I guess it's a good thing that at least somebody's paying attention.
Yeah, I mean, I think it makes sense, especially as more and more of these apps and networks pop up online. As you said, I mean, it's part of a bigger trend. So many companies, including Mark Cuban, who we had on the show a few weeks ago with his app CyberDust, so many companies are trying to push and stay on top of this trend. So I think it's good that people are a little more educated. And speaking of trends, Sarah, I do not know if you have heard of this social network, but this is the first time that I'm hearing about it. It's called We Heart It. And there was an article on Mashable this week that said that We Heart It currently has about 30 million users, and they're testing out loyalty with some ads. And the interesting thing here is not so much that the social network is testing ads, but that I have never heard of this network at all, and yet they seem to have approximately 30 million users.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Leo has talked about We Heart It on iPad Today in the past because it has a pretty good iPad app. And I don't dislike the network, but it's a little odd, Amber. We Heart It is, I think you can think of it as kind of somewhere between a Pinterest and a Tumblr. So it's not just, oh, I like this dress because I want to buy it, but it's inspirational stuff. I mean, you know, maybe you would post a funny gif of something and I would heart it because it's something that, for whatever reason, I like or I think positively about. It's odd to me that they have 30 million users. I definitely know of the network. I've heard of it. I've paid attention, but I don't really know anyone who's so into it. And it doesn't mean that they're not. But yeah, I know it's there's so many networks now that have all of these users, and you think, well, let's give them the benefit of the doubt that these numbers are actually correct. But who are all these people, and how do we, as people who study social networks for a living, get to the point where something creeps up on us where we think, who are all these people using this network?
But I think it really goes to our point that we've talked about in the past, where you see a younger generation who all of a sudden will migrate to a new social network. And here's a perfect example of this. They say in the Mashable article that nearly 80% of the site's active users are under the age of 25. So that may not be people that we hang out with on a regular basis, but obviously it seems to be a growing network. They also mentioned that people are going as far as to post that they work at this particular social network just because they like it so much. They're posting this on Facebook, that they're employees of the network, and a lot of fans so far. So it's amazing to me, like you said, that just very quickly a new network like this can pop up, and so many people using it on a regular basis. Obviously, they're capitalizing on the fact that image-based social media is so trendy and popular right now. Who knows if they'll be around a year from now, but we'll keep an eye on that for sure.
Yeah, it kind of seems like an acquisition waiting to happen, right? It's something Yahoo would love to buy. It seems kind of, if I had to make a guess, I would say We Heart It will be a Yahoo property in 1 year or less.
Ooh,
but I don't know what I'm talking about. No insider information here. That's just a wild guess.
No secret app information going out to you, Sarah?
None.
You haven't seen that on Secret?
Oh, absolutely none. No. I don't even like Secret. I don't go there anymore. That's
over.
The app for anybody who's like, what, Secret? Secret, actually, the name of the app where people are supposedly telling secrets. But, you know, I did actually open it up, I don't know, sometime in the last week, and it's just, it's so, they're not even really secrets. You know, people say things like, oh, well, I don't know, I'm not even going to. A lot of it is not even safe for work, but it's like, ugh, they're not even secrets. It's just a weird therapy session that I don't want to be a part of.
I just like getting you to talk about secret because every time I do, you're just like, oh, that app. I never go there, but I went there once.
Get off
recently.
My lawn. Tell me real secrets. This is like, that's the problem. And then it sort of, it devolves into the comment section is always like, people will say, well, that's not a secret. And then someone else will say, well, you know what? Unless you work at Secret, you can't really tell us how to use an app. We're just getting started. It's just silly.
This is what I mean. I'm just going to let you go. I'm just going to sit here.
It's like a schoolyard fight.
Seriously.
All right. Speaking of, not fighting, but moving around, I guess you would be exercising if you were fighting on the schoolyard. Moves, which is an app that we talked about recently because there was another competitor, Breeze, that also came out recently from the Runkeeper folks. But Moves kind of has been around for some time before that. This is the idea that your phone itself is your activity monitor. So you don't have a Fitbit that you've clipped onto your clothing. You don't have a Jawbone up that you're wearing around your wrist. You've just kind of got your phone, and it's usually attached to you or your purse or your backpack or something. And it tracks your activity throughout the day. Well, Facebook bought Moves, said the two will not be sharing data with each other for anybody who enjoys the Moves app but doesn't want all of that data to go into Facebook. But it doesn't really sound like they meant what they said.
Yeah, I mean, that's the interesting part of this story. So in less than 2 weeks, based on this article on The Verge, they basically have come out to say that it looks like Moves has gone back on that promise already. And in fact, they've already updated their privacy policy to state that they will be sharing user data, and it'll be sharing it, including but not limited to Facebook, as they mention. And if you go down towards the bottom of the article, you'll see also Facebook has issued a statement about this and has said that they have no plans to necessarily do anything with this data and to identify any Facebook users based on Moves users. And they try to specify a little bit more in terms of what they're going to do with it. But it's still a little bit muddy, I would say, and interesting to see Moves kind of step back so quickly.
It's weird. Yeah, you look at that statement and it's like, okay, Facebook says, we're not commingling data. We're merging data. We're not doing that. Or, well, they said, we have no plans to do that, which means we might have plans to do that. In other words, Facebook is not adding Moves user data to a Facebook user's Facebook account. But Facebook will be providing support and services to the Moves app. And to be able to do this, we have to have access to the data that Moves already collects from its users. It's so confusing. It's like, what's going on here? I guess really Facebook could claim we're merely clarifying what we didn't clarify very well the first time when it was public that we were acquiring the company. And I can see that, yes, if this is now a Facebook-owned company, Facebook needs to have some access to the data in order to make the product better, assuming that that's what they want to do. Facebook doesn't buy companies for no... I mean, it's all about data that will help Facebook.
Of course.
They're not doing it for their health here, so I'm not sure why anybody's too surprised, but it did happen pretty quickly.
Yeah, I mean, I think the surprise here is not so much that potentially Facebook and Moves do share data. I mean, I think the expectation is that, like you said, that would happen because they did acquire the app in the first place. But I think the surprise here is that Moves was so adamant in their initial report that they wouldn't be sharing data, and they wanted to make it very clear that everybody was safe and protected, and they were going to remain this kind of standalone app. And at the end of the day, like I said, I think it's a situation where, of course, Facebook is going to want access to some of that data. It just makes perfect sense. But I think Moves was a little bit premature to come out with that initial statement. And here's a perfect example of how it has gotten them in trouble, because it was less than 2 weeks ago.
You know, speaking of activity apps, Breeze, which is made by the same people who make Runkeeper, I was all excited about Breeze. I downloaded it. I've got it running in the background. I've got notifications turned on. Anthony, if you want to take my screen for a second, I took this screenshot of a notification that came in while my phone was locked. Now, tell me what this means, because I can't figure it out. You've almost reached your goal for the day, meaning I have not reached my goal for the day. Keep up the good work. You are 2 billion steps ahead of your goal.
What?
Yep, that's what Breeze is telling me. Yeah, yeah, that's, I believe that number is in the billions. One, two, yeah, that's like 20 billion. Like, apparently, somebody, I think it was Jonathan Strickland on Twitter, said, apparently you walked to the sun and back today. So good work, Sarah. Yeah, I don't know what's going on with Breeze, but it's like, you know, this stuff is, these apps are all fine and good, but if they're not accurate, they're not helpful in the least bit to me. I don't know what's going on with that, but apparently I'm not the only one who's had some step glitches, because I like to think that I exercise, but I don't exercise that much.
Not that much.
No.
Okay, this is a really interesting story and kind of a quirky, fun story, and it's about Spotify. So the interesting thing in this article is they mention that typically people think that Spotify really skimps on royalties with some of their artists. On average, it says the company pays out 0.007 cents each time an artist's song is streamed to its millions of users. Well, it looks like there's one band in Michigan, based on this article from The Verge, that really fought back against this. And what they did is they put a new album onto Spotify, and it was a recording of a bunch of different songs. The songs were each 30 seconds long, because that's how long you have to listen to a song in order for an artist to be able to get royalties. But there was no music in any of these songs. They were basically just silent recordings. And what the band did is they asked their fans to stream Spotify and the new album from this band overnight, so it would be played over and over and over again. And they actually earned about $20,000 in revenue from Spotify because of this. But eventually Spotify cut them off and was catching on to this little trick they were playing on them.
It's a trick, sure. It's a loophole. But, I mean, is it really against some Spotify terms of service? That's the thing. It's kind of like, why do they get shut down by Spotify? If it was an album that was, you know, when I'm working here at Twit, because it's really loud, you know, I put my headphones on and I listen to an album called White Noise, and that's all it is.
Yeah.
It's basically like having noise-canceling headphones. I just don't have any around here. So that's the sort of thing that you could listen to all night. I guess maybe silence itself is, you know, if there's actually no data in any of these audio files, maybe that's the way that Spotify can say, we're not paying you for nothing, because I could do it too. Maybe that's the problem, is they figure, well, if this band can make 20 grand, then anybody can. So we need to, you know, make an example of them before we have to pay people for not actually doing anything.
It's kind of brilliant, though, from the band's perspective, right? To do something like this. It might have been better, of course, if maybe they just had a little bit of music in each of their songs, so Spotify couldn't have taken it down so quickly. But the fact that it's absolute silence also, I think, makes a stance as well that I'm sure the band is happy with. So I think good news here for the band. They probably got more attention than they've ever received in many ways with this particular situation. Doesn't exactly make Spotify look too great, because I haven't really thought too much about how much artists are paid when you're streaming their songs. But when you see how little it is, you realize that potentially there are some artists who maybe don't necessarily get a great deal out of Spotify. So an interesting story about one band and their very creative idea.
Love it. Good work. I hope Spotify gives you that 20 grand. I definitely do.
Yes, you should get it.
We're going to be live with Andy Bao, the founder of upcoming.org, in just a moment. Just want to take a quick break and thank the folks at Shutterstock. You know, this is a unique new ad for us here on the Social Hour, because Shutterstock has a brand called Offset.com. Now, if you haven't heard of it, what it is a curated collection of photos that are really high-end, and illustrations too, from kind of the top editorial and commercial artists in the world. So you get high-quality images from these photographers and illustrators. They're award-winning. Their work has been featured in magazines like Condé Nast Traveler, National Geographic, Martha Stewart, and other, you know, national advertising campaigns. And they're authentic images that Offset has hand-selected because they tell a story. It's not, you know, Shutterstock, of course, is, you can search for anything. This stuff from Offset is very specifically, it's kind of got that photojournalism, you know, stuff that really moves you. And yeah, it's that story, narrative, artistic distinction, and again, quality, because Offset's professional team of photo editors are the people who are contributing to this. Many of the subjects in the photos are captured from real life moments. They're not posed, Yeah, this that guy is really surfing. Those people are really climbing that snowy mountain. Each image has only two price points: $250 for shots suitable for the web, $500 for high resolution suitable for print, depending on what your project is. And every image in the collection is completely royalty free. So terms are simple and generous, and you get rights managed quality. Martin Bailey is a nature and wildlife photographer. He's living in Tokyo right now. He has amazing just kind of nature-based prints. He's a popular international tour and workshop leader as well. He works on all seven continents. He's even a podcaster, so he's kind of one of our people. He's a blogger. He's an author. You love this. I mean, you absolutely love his images. But there's more. You can explore Offset today and sign up for a free account and find an image that tells your story. And maybe it's that cute little fox. Scroll back, Anthony. I mean, who doesn't want to tell a story with that guy? Ah, hi, guy. Sorry, I have fox on the brain. All right. buy one, get one free image on new accounts by going to offset.com/welcome/social hour. I'll give you that URL one more time. offset.com/welcome/social hour. Get started and let us know if you found the perfect image to tell your story. And thanks to Offset and the folks at Shutterstock for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. All right, Amber, are we ready to talk to our guest?
Yeah, let's do it. Super excited to have Andy on the line. I have followed waxy.org/links forever, and I think Leo introduced me to it many, many years ago. So thanks for joining us today.
You've been a long supporter. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Appreciate yeah, absolutely. Thanks for being with us. And I mentioned before the show, I kind of stalked you on Twitter a little bit yesterday. So thanks for being so gracious and making some time to
no
talk
problem.
To us for a few minutes. So, okay, Andy Bao. So Amber mentioned waxy.org, also a great, I don't know, what would you call it, a curation website?
Yeah, I mean, I've been writing about technology and internet culture for, I mean, God, since 2002, so about 12 years now.
That's awesome. A true pioneer. But we wanted to have you on the show specifically to talk about the saga of upcoming.org, which you are the founder of. But upcoming.org was, you know, it was, I remember it was popular. You know, back in 2007, it was a place for me to find out what was going on in San Francisco, where I live. And tell us a little bit about how it kind of, what the evolution of it and how it's kind of come back into your hands.
It is a crazy story. So I started it development in 2002 or so, launched it in 2003, just did it on my own. It was I was scratching an itch. The idea roughly was, you know, in the pre-Twitter, pre-Facebook era, we're talking like Friendster era, the only sites that were using a social network for anything were sites like Friendster, where it would just be like testimonials or connecting with other people. But I had this problem, which is that I was hearing about events after they'd happened from my friends. I was losing track of events that I wanted to go to. And so I thought, you know, I could use a social network to address this problem, to help surface interesting events that were going on in the world around me, and help keep track of the stuff that I cared about. And at the time, it was a fairly novel idea, and it came launched it in 2003, and it grew to the point it was entirely a side project from my day job. I was working at a financial company in Los Angeles, and after my son was born, I had practically no time to work on it. So I got two friends of mine, Gordon Luck and Leonard Lin, who have both gone on to do awesome things. They came on board as co-founders after the first year, and then after a year of development, kind of cranking on it, it grew to the point that it got that we agreed to sell it to Yahoo in 2005. And we did that with the hope that, well, we'd be able to work on it full time for the first time, and that they'd be able to provide the resources for it to grow and thrive. And that was true for a time. But after we left in 2007, it kind of fell apart. I say that it sort of fell into disrepair. Like, spam started getting on the site, it was never a great fit with Yahoo's demographics. It never really fit well. It was a quirky thing. If you remember it, it was the community skewed pretty geeky. The stuff that was getting surfaced was off the radar from, you know, traditional event listings. It wasn't the kind of thing you'd find in your local weeklies, and it was unique in that every event that was on the site was added by someone that used it. It was a community driven site. They built out the place name database. They built out every venue. Every event that was on the site was added by a member of the community. And as a result, it just had this unique vibe. And if your interests were similar to the other people that were on the site, it was for a time a really remarkable way of finding stuff that was going on. It also was public. You know, relative to something like Facebook's events, you didn't even need an account to be able to get value of it. If you were traveling to New York and you didn't have friends in New York, or you'd move to a new city, you could immediately tap in and sort of see interesting stuff from the community. If you did have friends that were there, then that made it even better. So we surfaced those things above just popular events. So after we left, yeah, it kind of fell apart, and then they shut it down. They shut it down last year, and I had been hearing rumblings even a year before that they were planning on closing it. I tried to reach out, tried to, you know, kind of approach them and say, you know, if you're not going to do anything with it, can I have it back? that didn't really go anywhere, and so I'd sort of resigned myself to the fact that, you know, that was over. Even though I missed it, I really missed it and wished it still existed. I knew that there were some others. I didn't know how many, but I thought, you know, that's it. Until last month, when out of the blue, I got an email from Yahoo offering to sell it back to me, the domain, and I jumped on it. And you know, I didn't know going into this if there was any interest. I decided to kind of gauge whether this was something that people wanted, and raise the money to develop it again using Kickstarter. So I launched that yesterday, and it exploded. I mean, within 90 minutes, it was funded.
I mean, you're at the time of us recording this, you're over $82,000. You wanted $30,000, which, yeah, you reached in 90 minutes. It's kind of funny. There was some article, I remember which publication, might have been the Next Web, that said, oh, Andy Bao is trying to bring back upcoming update. It's funded.
Yeah. Like, I think Mashable, the same thing. They posted it, and like, by the time that they'd written the article, they had to edit it. I had no idea going into it how many people there were still out there that wished it existed. And I mean, I knew for myself that I was having the same exact problems that inspired me to make it in the first place 10 years ago, because nothing's really come along to take its place. There's a wonderful site called Lanyard, which I'm an advisor for, that focuses solely on conferences. But everything else is like, you know, there really hasn't been anything else to kind of take its place. And so I knew that I missed it. I just had no idea how many other people felt the same way. So, you know, I have this validation from 1,200 other people and growing that are not just saying, yes, this is something that we want, but we will pay you to make it.
Well, so when you started upcoming.org back in, what did you say, 2003?
Yep.
Yeah, the web was a different place. So you now have the opportunity. I mean, Yahoo sold you the domain. Obviously, you raised a lot of money too. And you explained this in the Kickstarter pretty well, that this is a way for you to retain control, not be poised for another acquisition, that's not the idea. But how will upcoming.org take advantage of all of the tools that the web has now that you didn't have 11 years ago?
Yeah, see, that's the crazy thing. At the time that I first built it, it was before every major social network now. It was before Twitter and Facebook and Flickr and Foursquare, and, you know, predated all of these things. And it it was really hard to get something like that off the ground. It meant that it kind of had to skew geeky, because you had to reconstruct your entire social graph, for example, which means, you know, back then you couldn't just have, you know, Twitter or Facebook auth and then, you know, find friends, you know, on a new site that you're using. You had to create an account, find someone that you knew or invite them, and then, you know, figure out, are any of their friends all, you know, do I know these people? And you'd have to like friend people individually. And so that was, it just like kills growth back then. And, you know, without something like Foursquare's venue database, every single venue had to be added by a user again, which is like tedious for everybody. I mean, these are things that are solved problems. So I'm really looking forward to, you know, like this is effectively a blank slate. You know, I can build it for this era instead of, you know, the long gone like Web 2 era. I can actually build it for you know, using the tools and platforms that didn't exist at the time that I started. I'm very excited about that.
I'm just watching the Kickstarter page, and literally I can see the ticker going up as I watch it. So it's pretty amazing to watch that. Just out of curiosity, you know, your initial goal was $30,000. As Sarah mentioned, you now have over $80,000. I mean, how do you plan for what's going to happen by the end of the month? I mean, you still have quite a few days left in this campaign.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I have no idea. And the goal that I initially set, I mean, these are very modest numbers as far as, you know, starting an application, the kind of scope of upcoming. And, you know, the goal that I initially set was the bare minimum to be able to get it off the ground. Me working by myself for a limited period of time to just get something out there. And, you know, I've had people ask, what are you going to do with the additional funds? Are you going to do stretch goals? Are you going to do like the things that are commonly seen on Kickstarter? And my answer to that is no, I'm not going to do that. I use the additional funds to make upcoming better. I don't need to like throw out crazy, you know, artificial milestones to add, you know, features that I can't guarantee that I'll actually be able to build. Like, you know, there will be no Oculus Rift support for upcoming.org. I'm so sorry to break it.
Andy!
I hate to break that news here.
You know, Andy, since we're talking about all the cool stuff that you do, you're also the founder of the XOXO Festival, which is going to be, it'll be the third annual
Coming up in September.
Coming up in September in Portland, Oregon, which I've never attended, but I know a lot of people who have gone, and you know, I'm not exaggerating when I say that everyone always says it's the best festival that they've ever been to. Do you think upcoming.org can, you know, tap into the fact that, you know, obviously you've got this conference, this festival, which is a big hit, but there are others around the world? I probably think there are people sitting there saying, well, I mean, how many meetups and parties do I need to go to? Is upcoming.org the right tool for me, or does it speak to a certain kind of person?
I think it is, you know, it's really guided by the community, I should say. The events that showed up on Upcoming when it was around were events for a particular type of it was very much in the intersection of art and technology, and with like a strong kind of indie thread running through it. The events that were on there were unusual. They're not like I mentioned before, they're not the kind of thing that was showing up in traditional listings, because, you know, it was coming from the community. I mean, if Upcoming had existed, it was around when we started XO, I imagine it would have done really well there. It would have been like a great way to spread the word. What's funny is how Upcoming informed XOXO, which now informed this new generation, like this new relaunch of Upcoming. I mean, XOXO itself, I mean, for those who haven't heard of it, it is a festival. It's a 4-day arts and technology festival, but it's first and foremost primarily about independence. It's about artists and makers and hackers of all kinds that are using the internet to make a living doing what they love independently, retaining creative and financial control over their work. We bring some of the most interesting and talented people in art and like we have filmmakers, musicians, we have comic book designers, and Jonathan Colton just showed on screen. That's Tim Schafer from Double Fine. You know, we're bringing all of these people and just smushing them in a room, and you know, for not just a conference, but for it really has more of a festival vibe. We're doing experimental video games and film screenings and concerts and so on. But all tied back to that theme of independence. These are people that are bypassing traditional funding schemes. For many of the artists, it just means they're bypassing publishers. But for the people coming from tech, they're those that are building long-term, independent, sustainable businesses without going after a large VC round. Nothing wrong with that, but it does sort of set you on a path towards an exit. A path that inevitably ends up being an acquisition, an acquihire, or a fire sale, and then the rare IPO. But there's another class of business that is long term, that's sustainable, that has long slow growth, and those are businesses that VCs don't want to fund. And it's just sort of amazing to me that there are, there's other ways of doing that. And having been involved in Kickstarter, I knew that. This is actually my third Kickstarter project. I'm an advisor to the company. I was the former CTO. I'm very close to the team. And I've seen this happen time and time again across all forms of media and experienced it myself. XOXO itself was funded through a Kickstarter project that sold out in 2 days, $175,000 project. I did an album project in the first 2 weeks of Kickstarter that was funded in 2 hours. And these are things that I could not have done otherwise. There's no, the album project that I did was called Kind of Bloop, which was a chiptune jazz album. It was a tribute to Miles Davis's Kind of Blue, composed using the Nintendo Entertainment System, effectively like chiptune versions of jazz songs. No record label in the world would have touched that. It's like it's too niche, it's too weird, but I was able to do it. And similarly with upcoming, this would be a risky thing, and doing it by taking traditional funding would mean that it would mean that I was looking for the exit before I'd even walked in the door.
Go ahead, Amber.
Sorry, I just have one last question, and I'm just curious because very few entrepreneurs, especially people we've interviewed over the years, really get a second chance at running their company again. And I'm just curious if there's one thing that you learned from your first round with Upcoming and something that you're going to take into the second coming of Upcoming, if we can call it that.
I mean, I think that... It's maybe a different situation if you're building an app or something that doesn't have its own community. But when you're building a community, there's a level of trust there. Like people are not just putting data in. It's not data. I mean, it's experiences and memories, and people are writing things. And in the case of Upcoming, it's very explicitly their memories. It's the history of the things that they've gone to. It's the photos it's the memories that they've created. And I as I said, I was working on it as a side project, and I thought that it would really be the best thing for the long-term growth of the community. And that was before that first wave of acquisitions in the Web 2 era happened before people saw what happens when there's a weird community that's acquired, which is often that there's there are issues when bringing it into a new larger company, and very often it ends up in some level of sadness, like something happens, like it's shut down, it's features are removed, it pivots in some way. And I didn't know that at the time, and I thought going into it that I'd be, Upcoming would be around for much longer as a result, and that was something I didn't know, and that was a big lesson. And and the fact that that the community is I feel guilty about all that, I really do, and I wish that I could have changed that. And this, the fact that the community is backing this, these are almost exclusively people that used it before, and they're making it happen. And I'm deeply grateful to them. I'm also, I should add, really grateful to Yahoo for proactively reaching out to me
That was going to be my final question, Andy, is what do you think happened? You said a year ago it got shut down and you thought, well, that was the end of that. Why did they want to sell it back to you? Is there some good Samaritan, some guardian angel at Yahoo?
There was someone that stepped in, and I think what was happening is that they, you know, as they continue to focus, they have a lot of old domains that they don't use, and I think that they were going to be auctioning them off. That was reported publicly, and I think Upcoming was going to be in that batch. And this one person who I knew from Yahoo days stepped in and was like, we should, you know, offer this to Andy first. So I would love to see that. I mean, to me, that's something that should be commended. As far as I know, it's a first. I don't know that. I can't think of any other example where that's happened. Usually, if a founder, you know, gets a their domain back, it's as a result of, you know, a lot of money and a bankruptcy or something along those lines. It has happened in the past, but this sort of like proactive, you know, engagement is really unusual, and I would love to see this happen more. I mean, there are so many cases where there were dearly loved services that got shut down, years after acquisition. You're not using it, and it's sitting, in a virtual warehouse somewhere. Offer the domain back. I mean, or and maybe a cautionary tale to founders that are seeking acquisition. Build that into your acquisition contract. You know, build in like effectively a fail-safe. If they shut it down, you know, you should get right of first refusal. I mean, it's something nobody wants to think about, those scenarios, like that there's going to be some disastrous ending to the thing that you've made. But it's the responsible thing to do, I would say.
Andy Baio, thank you so much for not just telling the story, but it kind of turned into you mentioned cautionary tale, but really good advice for other entrepreneurs, and really giving people a sense of that independent spirit that I don't think we hear enough of. You know, I feel like a lot of things get built just to make folks money, and there's more to it, and there are a lot more people who build tools and services and projects like Upcoming that have a much bigger there's a bigger mission. So thanks so much for telling us more about it and coming on the show.
Well, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much.
Andy Baio, upcoming.org. Can't wait to see the next incarnation of a
me
service
too.
That I miss as well. Thanks, Andy.
Thank you both.
All right, Amber, before we get to a couple of our social tips, apps of the week, let's take a moment to thank 99 Designs for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. You guys know 99 Designs because they sponsor us regularly and we love them. Okay, so since we're talking about the status of services, of web presences, of social networks, what is the status of your social media design? What does it look like? Does it look awesome? There's probably some improvements that can be made, right? Maybe you're looking at your Facebook or your Twitter or your Google+ or any of your other social networking accounts, and you think, well, you know, my profile picture could be just a little bit more punched up, or there could be a cover image or a background image that helps better communicate my brand. I mean, right now my Twitter brand is all over the place. I could do better. I could help people know more about what I do for a living, and I don't really know where to start. I'm not a graphic designer. I don't know how to do any of that stuff. If your business kind of seems like, or you know, or even a personal brand seems like it's a little lackluster on social media, it's time to use 99 Designs to get some updated designs. Social media pages that have good visuals that are appealing to people are just more likely to be shared. People take you more seriously. People are impressed with the look of your brand. So you can ask the designers at 99 Designs for out-of-the-box concepts, and you'll really like those creative ideas that end up popping up, because these are designers who are professionals, and this is what they do for a living. You might say, I don't know, help me out. And you'll be really surprised and delighted by what you get back. When you start your next design, you'll have dozens of designs to choose from in just 7 days. So yeah, I mean, you can start right now, and within a week, you've got something that looks absolutely pro, that people say, wow, that looks amazing. You didn't really have to do much except use 99designs. Visit 99designs.com/social hour. That's 99designs.com/social hour. And we'll just throw in a $99 power pack of services completely free. Wouldn't you like to save $100? A power pack gives you more designer time, more attention. They'll bold and highlight and feature your design project in their marketplace. So that means you basically get twice as many designs, almost anyway. Visit 99designs.com/social hour and take advantage of that power pack. Why not? And we thank 99designs for their support of the Social Hour. All right, Amber, let's talk about the social tip of the week. This is very exciting. Google Maps, which is obviously an app that many of us know and love. I think it's by far the best maps app that I have, at least on, you know, my iPhone, my iPad, has some really cool new features.
Yeah, you know, one in particular, it's called Lane Assist, and I can't tell you the number of times that I could have used this in the past when I'm using Google Maps and we're traveling and we're on the highways, particularly in the U.S., where this will work very effectively. And you're driving on the highway and you're wondering which lane to be in, and all of a sudden you miss the exit because, you know, you've been given instructions and directions, but you're in the wrong lane and you can't get over. Well, it looks like Google has updated their Maps app so that they do have this feature that will actually tell you what lane you're supposed to be in. Of course, this sounds very, very dangerous if you think about the fact that you would be reading this, but you can get voice controls and voice commands and, of course, stay safe on the road so you keep two hands on the wheel.
I love this idea because, you know, if you're... When I first read about this, I was like, is it really that hard to be in the right lane? But, you know, let's say you're in a state or a country you've never been in before. Some of that stuff is not always intuitive. There definitely have been times where I know that I'm supposed to get off on a certain exit, but it's like a freeway I've never been on, and you're actually exiting to the left, and then you're like, oh God, you know, and it's stressful, and it can be unsafe because you're not really sure where you're supposed to be. And that's just really helpful. You know, it's like if you were a passenger in my car and you know where you're going, you say, oh, you know what, you kind of want to actually stay over to the right here because the traffic gets weird on the left. All of that stuff factors into getting somewhere, point A to point B, not only the fastest time possible, but, you know, in the safest way, the most convenient way. So I love this idea. It's not even really something I ever would have thought of in a Maps app, but I can't wait to try it out.
Yeah, it looks really cool. So it's available in the U.S., and it will be available in major metropolitan areas on both highways and local roads there. In Canada right now, it's only available on highways and no news about other places. But hopefully we'll see this roll out. Like many Google products, it will eventually roll out to other countries. But like I said, I could have used this many times when I'm on a big highway, just not sure what lane to be in. And if you can stay safe, then I think this is very helpful, like you said, just to avoid kind of swerving all over the place. It's never fun.
You know, Google Maps, it's 3.0, at least on the iOS app, that's the version. I think it's, I don't know, 7.0 or something in the Android app because they number things differently over on those Android sides of things. But there are some other pretty cool integrations into this app as well. I actually talked about some of them on i5 yesterday. There's Lane Assist. There's also more information when you are looking at public transportation. If you're in an urban area that has public transportation options, you've got more information on, okay, well, I could take the L train, but I'm still going to have to walk 7 minutes or so. And that always helps. It always helps factor into my total travel time, especially if I'm wearing uncomfortable shoes, Amber.
Yeah.
It's really nice to know how much I'm actually going to have to be, you know, schlepping around between bus stops. And then there's also Uber integration, meaning if you are an Uber user, and it's a car service, either black car or kind of regular cars, which is their UberX service, or even taxis in certain cities, you can decide to take an Uber right from the Google Maps app, depending on your options. So Google Maps might say, well, you take that L train, it's going to take you, 30 minutes to get across town. Or you can take an Uber and there's a black car 2 minutes away from you and you'll get there in 7 minutes. So, you know,
that's very cool.
Yeah, it's kind of even though the Google Maps app will dump you into the Uber app itself. It's not actually integrated into the Maps app. It's very interesting that Google is using this third-party service as a transportation option when you're searching for how to get somewhere in the directions section. I don't know. It's great for Uber.
Very helpful. Yeah, that sounds very cool. I would definitely use that. We have another interesting story, and this one is an app, and it's called Stand With. And what I really like about this app is that it was created by this woman, Yael Cohen. Sarah, I don't know if you've heard of her before, but she started an organization called F Cancer.
F being, yes, we're shortening it. I don't know her personally, but yes, I know who she is.
Yeah, so she's built this amazing community after her mother was diagnosed with breast cancer in 2009. She went online, she built a community for other people who were facing the same challenges and who were friends and family members of people who had gotten cancer and really wanted a community to come together. So she recently launched her own app called Stand With. And the idea behind the app is that it's really like a task management app for someone who is dealing with a situation like this and who wants to make sure as a caregiver that they're able to almost like delegate different tasks and responsibilities to friends and family to help someone out. So as she explained it in this article on Fast Company, it's not necessarily just about, you know, okay, we're going to drop a casserole off this person's house, but maybe this individual, you know, needs help running errands or doing things, but you can get people to come together and work as a team to stand with this person. So that's the concept behind the download.
Love it. Oh, and I'd love to have her on the show to talk more about this. That's just, it's such a good idea, you know. Yeah, absolutely. You know, my mom, we've had a history of cancer in our family, and my mom does some hospice work. And it's the same kind of idea. You know, it really does sort of kind of take a village, really, when somebody needs a variety of help, and every little thing counts. And it can be a challenge just to organize the whole thing. So the idea of having an app that helps people work together for somebody who needs to lean on more than one person at a time is awesome.
It's awesome. And there's also social media integration here, too, which is yet another reason we could have her on the show to talk about this, because it will sync up with Facebook, for example, and pull people into the community. And what I love is the system to determine if someone has owned a task or not. So they have, just based on this screenshot here, they have different tasks like, we need a wedge pillow for when mom gets out of surgery. We need groceries for the weekend. Take mom to her pre-surgery appointment. And based on people owning those tasks and saying, hey, I'll help out with that specific responsibility, it turns a different color. So as they explain here, there's push notifications. If no one answers the call, it stays red. Once someone takes on the errand, it turns yellow. And once it's completed, it turns green. So this is great. Like my mother-in-law just had a stroke, and, you know, sort of a different experience, but in November she had a massive stroke. And I know from being in a family that's forced to kind of come together and do all these different tasks, pick up hospital records, you know, get her a wheelchair, a cane, that she's in therapy all the time, that being able to manage tasks like this so it doesn't all fall on one person is absolutely critical for everybody to kind of stick together.
I love this. Stand With. I'm gonna take it for a, well, take it for a spin is... Well, anyway, I'm going to do more research and definitely cover it on i5 next week. But yeah, you're bringing it to me. This is the first I've heard of it, and with all of the silly apps out there, it's nice to have something that is truly a tool for the greater good. We actually have another app that's a little bit more of that fun app, but hey, photography, art, video is also sort of the greater good. Hey, we're all artists, right? This is actually a fun app that's new from the people who make Hipstamatic. Now, Hipstamatic itself is a photography app that mimics old style film photography, meaning you choose a camera lens, you choose a type of film. This is all virtual, of course, inside the app. And then you put them together, and the pictures that come out of it have the attributes of what the actual film might look like were you, you know, living in the dark ages before digital photography. What's interesting about Hipstamatic is it appeals to me because I love the element of surprise. You know, I'll kind of put together some stuff that I think is cool and take a photo, and then I look at it and be like, that didn't work out at all. That's a really weird type of film to use with this lens. Let me switch it up a little bit. And it's fun, but it's not for everybody. I think in this day and age, a lot of people are like, well, no, I want to, you know, have the filters after the fact, or I want to know what it's going to look like before I take the photo. So it's kind of fun for those of us who are nostalgic for yesteryear. You even have, yeah, different little camera packs and that sort of thing. But the community, the Hipstamatic community, is the people who love the app really do love the app because it was kind of around before. It was around before Instagram. It's kind of got that hipster type of a thing going on. So you can say it was a bit of a pioneer in the photography app space. Well, the folks behind Hipstamatic now have a new app called Cinematic, and as the name implies, it is video rather than photo based. And this article that we're looking at from the Next Web really says, you know, it's kind of like a competitor to Vine, because you're taking sort of short format videos that can then, you know, be shared with others. What's different, though, and this is kind of the way that Hipstamatic is as well, Cinematic is not its own social network. So it's designed to, you take these short videos and then share them somewhere else rather than Vine, which is all about, you know, staying within the Vine experience and social network itself. Amber, I don't know. I mean, I might be a little bit too much of a Hipstamatic fangirl to have an unbiased opinion of this, but I'm excited.
Yeah, it looks cool. I mean, I think that it has some sort of different features and, I mean, great promo video. If you're listening to the audio version of the show, definitely check out our website for a link just to the promo video, because it's neat that you can filter the footage, of course, you know, one of the basic features of it. And I like it. I mean, I think more and more some of these micro video tools are, you know, hopefully getting a little more advanced and interesting, because I don't tend to use Vine a lot. And we've talked about this before in the past, but for some reason, I feel like I would use something like this.
Yeah,
it's neater.
Yeah, it's kind of stepping it up. I think that we're still, and you and I have talked about this at length, we're still in that era where it's like, video's cool, but nobody really knows what to do with it. Yes, yeah. Vine has, you know, there's some sort of Vine superstars, and there's definitely people who are like, Sarah, Vine, you know, videos are awesome, but... Yeah, I remember, you know, my iPhone 5S does slow-mo video, and I took like 3 slow-mo videos last year and was like, ooh, that's cool. And then I kind of like stopped finding needs to do that. I want something that helps us all want to be more creative video-wise. And what's neat about Cinematic is you can then share something to Vine, which looks a little bit nicer, kind of like the way sometimes I post photos on Instagram that I cleaned up using a variety of other photo apps. I didn't even use any of the Instagram filters. It's just the social network that I feel like a lot of people will see my photo. So you kind of piggyback on these variety of services. So that's cool too.
Yeah, it looks very cool. I'm going to try it out.
Good. I'm glad to hear it. All right. So let's take a moment to, we've got Ratterfad coming up still, but before that, let's take a moment to thank Audible. We're not going to forget you, Audible. Audible, of course, is the place to find all the audiobooks your heart could ever desire. How many, you ask? More than 150,000 of them. All downloadable titles across all types of literature, fiction, nonfiction, periodicals. The list goes on and on. Audible.com is truly the leading provider of audiobooks for anybody who enjoys the idea of having a story read to them by someone else. Sometimes it's the author. Sometimes Audible has there are a variety of people who do audiobooks who have beautiful voices. The House at Riverton, for example. What are we looking at here? Narrated by Caroline Lee. This is just something that Anthony had pulled up. What's kind of fun, Anthony, can you play a little tiny bit of audio just so we get an idea of what this sounds like?
And enormous fire-breathing dragons with jets shooting water 100 feet into the air. We maintain our position, watching as the car continues without us around the turning circle.
So this is kind of fun because, okay, The House at Riverton, I might read that and I might love the book, but in my mind, I'm not doing an English accent. You know, there are certain kinds of fun extras that you get with an audiobook, because your mind is able to kind of go to a different place, and you can be doing other things at the same time. I can't read a book and drive, but I can listen to a book while I'm driving, or you're commuting, or you're exercising, or you're just, I don't know, you're on an airplane. There are so many times where you just kind of, you know, want to give your eyes a rest and read a book, but you use Audible. All right, for listeners and viewers of The Social Hour, Audible is offering a free audiobook to give you a chance to try out their service. Maybe you're like, well, I don't know. You guys have talked about Audible, but I just never really got on the bandwagon. This is the time. Get that free audiobook. One audiobook you could consider downloading is The House at Riverton, or pretty much any other book. To download an audiobook for free, any audiobook, long as it's a single credit book, which, by the way, is yours to keep. You never have to, like, give it back or anything. You download it. It's free. It's yours forever. Go to audiblepodcast.com/social hour. Again, audiblepodcast.com/social hour. And thanks to Audible for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. Good to have you back. All right, Amber, what is on our rad or fad? our rad or fad, I was going to say pin
this,
board, and that makes no sense at all. But yes, just
I hear where you're coming from, but you are going to love this.
I am.
I have a feeling you'll just think this is so great and definitely rad. Okay, maybe not. This is the next social media buzzword, and I saw this all over the place, and I find it very disturbing. This particular article that I found is from CNBC. The video plays right away, just be warned, but basically they're talking about a new buzzword, and it's no longer about selfies. It's about Groofies, which is like a group selfie. And
oh,
there
God.
Is a company that has just come out with a smartphone, a company based in China. And they're saying that they came up with this idea of the Groofie, and they see more people wanting to take group pictures, kind of like selfies, but with many people, just like they did at the Oscars. And in fact, this camera will let you do that. You can capture more people in a single frame.
So what is it? There's like a fisheye lens or something like that, so that there's more people that are on the peripheral that could be in the picture.
They don't exactly mention the lens specifically, but they do say it has a panoramic mode, obviously, to be able to capture more people in a single frame. And although I do like that idea, I mean, I think there are times when I would use that. I absolutely hate this word groofy, and I hope that people never, ever use it, and I hope it just stops.
I hate it, too. I hate it. First of all, it sounds like roofie, which is...
It does.
You know, most of the time, not something that anybody wants any experience with.
Most of the time.
Yeah, I mean... I'm like, listen, what you do in your spare time is none of my business, but roofing people is pretty rude. So groofy, not into it. However, I don't think the phenomenon of a bunch of people wanting to take photos of themselves is going away anytime soon.
No, me neither.
So a phone that would help you take a better photo with an outstretched arm of you and your friends on the beach during your vacation, I'm all for that. I think that sounds great.
Yeah, you know, I can't tell you how many times you're trying to take sort of a selfie with three or four people, and you know, you're trying to put your heads in, someone's head always gets cut off. So I do love the idea of the technology, but I think if we're talking about rad or fad, specifically about groofy, then it is a big fat fad, and chances are it will go away, but the technology may still exist to allow you to do that.
I feel like selfie is sufficient.
Yeah.
You know, if you and I take a photo of ourselves and hashtag selfie, I don't feel like anyone is confused as to what we mean. Yeah, there's more than one person, and self is just indicating one person, but isn't that enough? Can't we just expand the term selfie to just be a photo taken by one of the people in the photo?
Yeah, we don't need groofy. I mean,
no.
we just don't.
Groofy.
That is one of those words we just don't need, Sarah.
We don't need it. So I guess I very much hope that the name is a fad, but the concept is rad.
It's interesting.
This
is kind of a split one then.
Yeah. And I think that there's so many apps that are designed really with the intention, developers realize, like, oh, people are taking photos of themselves or videos of themselves. We've talked about some of that stuff. So really just the cameras getting better is like, sure, it'll help a group shot, but it just helps pictures in general. So, you know, it's kind of, I feel like sometimes selfies get a little bit more recognition than they deserve. It's like, what we want is just better quality for all sorts of pictures. And, you know, we've all got front-facing cameras, and now we have more options. But Rad and fad, Amber.
Rad and fad.
Both rad and fad. All right, well,
no,
that...
No groofies.
No groofies. I mean, groofies. Take them, but don't call them groofies. Please,
yes.
Beg of you.
Please,
that about does it for this episode of The Social Hour. This was so much fun. We had some news. Andy Bao had... If you're joining us
Such
late, anybody
story.
Who's watching us, the live version, I'll probably tweet once the show goes up on our website a million times, because it was just one of the nicest... most heartwarming stories of a web property I've ever heard.
I know, it's amazing, right? It just kind of shows the goodwill of Yahoo, and we don't have a lot of those stories included necessarily on the show, so it was a fun one. So share it with your friends.
Absolutely. Quick reminder that we do record this show on Thursdays at 12 noon Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern time. Do join us live if you can. Otherwise, twit.tv/TSH is where you can keep up with all of our past episodes. We've had a really great run of a bunch of guests over the last, over a month now. Amber and I are so pleased with the direction that having regular guests is going in. So if you've missed any over the last few weeks, do catch up, because we've really talked to a bunch of amazing folks and lots more amazing folks on the horizon as well. Amber, anything exciting going on with you before we do this show again?
I don't think so. I'm home for the next couple of weeks, so no travel coming up. I do go to Chicago, I think 2 weeks from now. But other than that, I'm home. And when I'm home, that's always a good thing. And it has finally become patio weather here, Sarah. So
Yay.
We have warm weather in Toronto, and that's always a good thing.
Love it. Well, thanks, everybody, for watching and listening to this episode of The Social Hour. Until next time, I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Amber MacArthur, and we'll see you soon.